Inglo and Plonlewat.
Hester joins me in the studio. We are talking this morning about gardens, of course, but not just any garden. No, no, no. A biodiverse garden is the subject of today's show. Hester, what do we mean by a biodiverse garden? Give us a bit of an overview and an insight.
We're talking about gardens that have got lots of different things in them. So biodiversity is just short for biological diversity. It's very straightforward. So the variety of plant or animal life found in a particular habitat, and more diversity is generally considered to be better. If we're talking about a habitat, we mean it's your garden. So within a biodiverse garden is usually one that has a broad selection of plants that attract and support, and sometimes, yes, unfortunately, get eaten by a broad selection of animals and all sorts of other things. And it can also mean making more types of habitat to support a broader range of animals and butterflies and all sorts of things in the garden as well.
Why do a biodiverse garden? Is it lazy?
That's a really good question. I think that it could be interpreted like that, because actually the way to get a biodiverse garden is to let it be a bit messy and a bit wild.
Yeah.
Really?
I remember living in an apartment on the rez-de-chaussee down at the bottom. Yeah. I had a little tiny patch of grass, and my neighbour was always on at me to go and get rid of all the dandelions because, as she said, if I have dandelions in my garden, then she's going to get dandelions in hers.
She's true.
And I said, no, I like it biodiverse.
You're right.
For all of the bumblebees.
It is for all the bumblebees. It's a very important early nectar source.
I didn't want to go and mow my lawn, to be very honest with you. But also the bumblebees.
I think being overly tidy is unhelpful. So that could mean leaving piles of leaves in the corner of the garden. It could mean letting some seed heads stay on for things like goldfinches over the winter. It can mean all sorts of different things. And people do get quite twitchy about unmowed things.
About messy gardens.
About messy gardens, does.
So go on, the easiest steps to take, I guess, are just sort of leaving things
yeah.
out.
Yeah. So I would say if you've got a lawn, I would be a bit brave. So have you heard about, I think we've talked about this actually on the show, about No Mow May for lawns. And it was an idea that people would simply not mow their lawns in May. This is partly because a lot of wildflowers come up just before that and they set seed at this period. And if you leave them, they'll actually properly set seed rather than having their little heads cut off. And the idea is that it very quickly increases biodiversity in gardens. It also might train people to not mow quite so often. So we in our garden did no mow May, no mow June as well, because it was just looking gorgeous. Can cut it twice in July and have cut it once in September. So obviously the ecological impact of not using petrol to cut our lawn, but also the volume of wildflowers is enormous, and our lawn recovered much, much faster after the drought this summer.
So let it grow.
Let it grow. Let it just get on with being things. And if you can't face that, how about adding a wildflower boundary? So the edge of your grass, either just don't mow that bit, or you can reseed it with a wildflower mix. So you get all sorts of pretty things like corn cockles and poppies and things like that. That's a good idea. Or you can even add bulbs to naturalize. Then lots of bulbs naturalize really well under trees and in the boundaries round the edge of your lawn, and they look absolutely lovely. So think about kind of early narcissus, early daffodils, crocuses. Some of the wild tulips will be really happy as well.
Coming up in a minute, we'll talk about hedges and flower beds and also biodiversity when it comes to growing veg. Stay with us, Hester.
Dig It, sponsored by Schilliger Garden Centre in Glan and Plan-les-Ouates.
Hester's here. We've got a prize to give away on the show, courtesy of Schilliger Garden Centre. Hester, what are we giving away on the show today?
We have a bird box and a robin nester. How cute is that?
Why do we want to encourage birds to come into the garden for biodiverse gardens? What can birds do for us?
They eat caterpillars. They're extremely useful. And they also pick aphids, particularly small birds like robins and blue tits, eat aphids off the edges of trees.
I'm going to ask you to talk about our prizes today. We've got a few pictures.
Cute.
These, whoever goes into the competition today can go and pick these up from Schilliger Garden Centre. We're giving away both of these. So can you please describe, Hester, what we've got?
The robin nest is it's a woven, like a little basket with a little tiny hole at the front of it, like a nest that a robin would make. And it means that they're very likely to nest in your garden because they're quite lazy little birds. And the other one is made of wood with a little bird picture on the front. front of it, for probably quite a small bird as well, I should think. Perfect.
All very natural looking. They
fit gorgeous. They look lovely.
So we need a question. If you'd like to get into the competition, we're simply going to ask you, Hester.
Can you name a bird?
That's right. That's what we're asking today. And yes, if you send in the word pigeon, you'll be in the draw. You will, even though I don't know how many of you are hoping that pigeons will nest in these. But yes, name any bird and you'll go into the draw to win both of these. We're going to have one winner to win both of these lovely prizes, the birdhouse and the robin nester. So a real enthusiast. Name any bird at all. 939 on the text. Start your message off with WRS or email studio@worldradio.ch. And thanks very much to Shilliger Garden Centre for these wonderful prizes. Get your answer in now. We'll leave that competition open for about an hour.
Dig It, sponsored by Shilliger Garden Centre.
Talking about biodiverse gardens, we said that we would talk about hedges, flower beds, and even getting biodiverse when it comes to growing your own veg. Hester, what's a biodiverse hedge when it's at home?
So it's one that's not composed of a monospecies, not just one thing. Ideally, something also that includes native plants. Ideally.
Native, just something local.
Yeah, so something that native bees, butterflies, birds, little animals, insects like to make into their home. So if you've ever looked inside a two-year hedge, typically, which are those large conifer hedges made with these very flat sprays of leaves, there's nothing in there. Nothing at all in there. There's no birds, there's no insects, there's nothing. And that's not great for biodiversity. They've also unfortunately been proved, particularly this last summer, to not resist drought particularly well either. So if you're thinking about replacing a hedge or you've got dieback in sections of it, maybe don't replace it with the same thing. Huh. Maybe start thinking a bit more broadly and wonder what else you could put in. So if you're looking at native plants, you could look at yew, you could look at beech, you could look at hornbeam. Holly's brilliant for hedges. If you want to be a bit broader, there's all sorts of other really nice flowering plants, hedge plants or plants that you can use in a hedge, things like weigelas and lilacs, which actually are beautiful in hedges as well, and flower for a good long time and are very useful for nectar sources for birds and for bees and for all sorts of other things.
It's perfect. I think you may have answered. We've got a question a little bit later about different hedges, different hedge options and something native. So we will get back to that as well in case there are some more options. What about veg, growing your own veg? Can it help to just really try and create a variety and be growing more than one thing at any one time?
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes also think about some sacrificial veg. So a couple of butterflies lay their eggs on different things. So obviously cabbage whites lay them on cabbages. Some of some of the bigger butterflies lay their eggs on fennel. So it might help to plant a couple of those things in order to let the butterflies lay their eggs on them, and then you'll have beautiful butterflies in your garden. It's a bit of a weird idea. One of the other things you can do is to really expand your kind of palette of as to what you eat and also what you grow. So if you always grow tomatoes, maybe try growing some different varieties, and certainly don't grow them in the same place every single year. So try and practice crop rotation in that you literally move the plants from year to year and then follow them up with something that's not from the same plant family. And also maybe grow something a little bit weird and unusual, like cucamelons, or also there's loads of things. If you look in James Wong's brilliant book, he has hundreds of different varieties. I guarantee you've never grown, but are actually really readily available, particularly if you're going to grow from seed.
What else can we often find in gardens that we might not even think, oh, that's to do with encouraging a biodiverse garden, but it actually really helps?
How about a woodpile? Woodpiles are brilliant. They're absolutely fantastic. So most people have got woodpiles and most people cover them up. If you leave a little section of it to start to biodegrade, as in you're going to let it rot gently, you will have the most incredible little habitat. And it doesn't need to be very many. They say between 3 and 5 logs is enough to start.
It?
Yeah, it's enough. and don't bother covering it, just leave it out. You put some branches over the top of it and you will find really quickly, you may even have wonderful things like stag beetles in there. You'll certainly have an interesting variety of fungi and you'll have lots and lots of little tiny vertebrates and invertebrates living there. And then of course you have, then you start getting the larger creatures like birds that then predate on those, and you have a much, much more interesting and much more varied garden very quickly.
I want to get to just a couple of questions. You can send questions in to Hester as well. Send them in studio at worldradio.ch. We've got a question from Pippa. She says, we've inherited a massive kaki tree in our new garden. Are there any birds or animals that will eat them, as we can't eat them all?
Yes, kaki trees, when they're well established, they really do produce a lot. I mean, kilos and kilos and kilos of fruit. And kaki trees are really interesting. So there's several different varieties of kaki, some of which need to be almost rotting before you can eat the fruit. They need to be very mushy, and some of them it doesn't really matter terribly much because they're quite sweet. Yes, actually, loads of animals and birds. You will notice if you leave them on the tree long enough, there'll be lots of nibbles and pecks out of them. And the nibbles are squirrels. They love kaki fruit. And birds, once they get into them, so you, if you have a close look, you might see that some of them actually already been hollowed out and it's just the skin that's left. Huh. They've already nibbled out to the inside of it. If you want to collect them all and not have to have them, you know, fall on the ground, bits and bits, do just collect them all and put them in a pile in the corner of the garden and they'll decompose there. You'll find that hedgehogs, if you're lucky enough to live near woodland deer, absolutely love them. But all sorts of other animals will come in and eat them for you.
Nice. Thanks very much. Hester, stay with us. We've got more questions coming up in a moment.
Dig It, sponsored by Shilliger Garden Centre.
Got a competition this morning. We are giving away a robin nester and a bird box. Hester, what are you going to tell us about these lovely prizes? Why are they so good for gardens?
Well, they're great because it takes all the thinking work out of the decision making for the bird, for starters. Mm. And the more birds you can attract to the garden, the more pests they'll eat and the less spraying and other unhelpful things you get to not do. It's brilliant.
We love it. All right. So if you would like to win both of these and encourage multiple birds into your garden space, then all you need to do is name a bird. It really is. That's how we've set this. We have so many of your messages coming through. Emma has said a robin. We've got Michael who says a wedge-tail eagle. I'll tell you that's not going to fit in this bird box, but it's a bird. You're in the draw. Also, Michael has said, I was listening to the show this morning and heard you speaking about no mow May at our house. That's easy, as we still have snow on the ground in the garden a lot of May each year. So I imagine Michael's up somewhere at a fairly decent altitude. We've also, thanks Jamie, a Brankenhagen. I'm gonna go, it's a brown throat. Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope I pronounced it perfectly. Glyn says a black redstart. We've also got lots on the text. Sarah says blue tit, yellow tit, blackbird, thrush, woodpecker, swallow, etc., etc. Many thanks. Really enjoy the show with Hester. Thank you. And we've got Jennifer who says my favourite's a robin. Robin's very popular. That's why we're giving away a robin nester. Mm. Keep them coming in. You'll go into the draw for these lovely two bird boxes, a birdhouse and a robin nester from Shilliger Garden Centre. Thank you so much to them. Open on Sundays at the moment as well. Little shout out. Now, got a couple of questions, Hester. The next one is from Lisa. Lisa says, I was visiting a garden earlier this autumn. I noticed that one of the aster plants was covered in butterflies and bees. In autumn, I'd love to grow one, but I live in an apartment. It's only got a small balcony. Can I grow one there? We're talking about specifically an aster plant that's going to get... it's going to appeal to butterflies.
Covered in butterflies. Yes, you really can, but you've got to go for a little one. Because asters are quite deep-rooted and they don't like drying out. So I would look for any one of these ones. So I really like, there's one called Jenny, which is an Aster demosus, which is kind of July to September. That's the other great thing about asters. They flower for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And they look quite nice, particularly the dwarf ones look quite nice out of flower as well. Like they're nice kind of shrubby, cushion sort of shaped plants. They're quite attractive. I also like the brilliantly named Goliath, which is hilarious because it's teeny tiny. It's 30 centimetres.
Yes.
Tall. which is a very, very pretty blue. It's lovely. And butterflies and bees do like this. They also like Jenny. That goes from April through till September, which I think is pretty good going for a plant. And then there's one called Happy End, which is bright pink, which is April to June. So if you need to choose just one, go for Goliath, because it flowers for months and it's really hilarious in terms of name and it's very pretty.
They really had a sense of humour when naming these, didn't they?
It's a great
all
name.
Of them. Lovely. I hope that helps there, Lisa. And if you missed any of those, then this will be available as a podcast on our website later, worldradio.ch/digit. So you can listen again with a pen and paper and note all of those down. We've also got Pete. Pete, now we touched upon this earlier about getting your hedges to be more biodiverse so that birds and animals actually come and live in them rather than them being these empty hedge shells that quite a lot are. Pete says, we want to plant a native hedge and our commune have a list of suggestions, but the plants are all too tall to be suitable. Do you have any other ideas for us? That's from Pete.
So I've come across this a few times. So that often lots of communes or your local wildlife organisation might have suggestions for native hedges. And very frequently, the plants that are suggested are enormous. And in most places, your hedge won't be allowed to be, particularly if it's right on your boundary, taller than 2 meters tall, or sometimes shorter if you're on a major road.
Right. So your hedge is not allowed to be more than 2 meters.
Yeah.
And the commune will suggest a plant to you that's naturally going to grow to about, what, 5, 10?
Some of them are 8 meters, yeah. So that's problematic. So either you're going to have to accept that these plants, you're going to have to cut them, which you're going to have to cut them anyway, or maybe look a bit more broadly to things that are going to behave better. And I think in this particular instance, maybe you're going to want to mix and match a little bit. So I think I would suggest looking at plants that provide nectar, like Fritinia, for example, Fritinia red robin. It's actually quite a good nectar source. Or Viburnum Eve Price is also a great winter nectar source. Neither of them are native. So maybe think about using plants like that within your hedge, as well as one or two shorter varieties. So some of the corners, some of the dogwoods are great native plants and don't get to 2 meters, but I absolutely wouldn't base an entire hedge around it because they get quite thin and they're quite messy. So you maybe use something like a dogwood for, I don't know, 5% or 10% of your hedge, and then base the rest of the hedge around things that are going to be a bit better behaved.
Planting a new hedge.
Yeah.
How tall is the plant that we're going to go and pick up from a garden centre?
Depends how much money you want to spend on it.
Oh.
So you can, if you see these kits on the internet, you think, oh, native mixed hedge or mixed flowering hedge, this is amazing value. It's 30 francs for 10 plants. Yes, it's because they're not taller than my hand. When you get them. Now, that's fine buying teeny tiny plants, but understand that it will take 5 years for them to get to a reasonable size and actually give you any screening. It is sometimes worth buying bigger plants for a situation like this.
Those more well-established plants easier to take care of? Will they take root and be more likely to succeed?
Yes, you have to water them.
Oh, I know. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, right. You have to water them. I was put in a seep hose, which is one of these hoses with holes punched in it, when you plant them.
Got it. Got it. Are there any hedges that we should be buying this month? I know that you say that hedges are a pretty, it's a good time to buy.
It's a very good time to buy. So, because you've got three options. First are bare root plants. And literally they come, they look like sticks. They might have a bit of mud clinging to the roots. That's it. But they are cheap as chips. Cheap, really super cheap. However, you do have to plant them straight away because they will die if you don't. That's the danger, or at least leave them in damp sacking. The second option is root ball, which is the next kind of stage up in terms of expense. And they will come literally wrapped in a bit of sacking with a bit of mud attached to the bottom of it. And those you can leave for a week or so before you get them into the ground because they've got their own soil around them, so they won't die. And then the last one's a pot ones, but you will find there's a lot of deals on in garden centres at the moment for hedging plants because they're trying to shift them out as well. So it's well worth looking around at the moment, and there's often discounts on multiple purchases. So if you're buying 10 of one thing, it may well be worth your while. So is there a discount for volume?
Now is the time.
Now is the time. Anytime till March.
Keep your questions coming in at studio@worldradio.ch. You can also use that email address to tell us that the name of any bird any bird at all. That's it. And you'll go into the draw for that birdhouse and robin nester, courtesy of Shilliger Garden Centre.
Shilliger, let your inspiration grow.
Talking about biodiverse gardens, I would love to throw this question out to Hester. Anything that we haven't mentioned that is just a great space, a great habitat for animals and insects, just more opportunity to get biodiverse.
We talked about log piles.
We did.
How about piles of stones?
Yeah, great.
Have you got stones in your garden? Most people do, actually.
Can find a few.
Yeah, you probably find a few. So if you don't have the delight and luck to have a dry stone wall, which would be the ideal for creating interesting habitats for all sorts of things, mostly things like lizards, but also lots and lots of other invertebrates, then you can just make a pile of stones. And they really don't have to be very fancy. There's a very prettily organised one at Prangin at the Chateau down in Les Aberrieux, which is the meadow in front of the Chateau. If you want to go and have a look at a very beautifully organised one, you can. It's a sort of cairn tumulus. It's lovely. But you really don't need to do anything fancy. Just make sure there's lots of spaces in between.
And multiple different spaces, because they're not all just going to crawl in there and then all get along.
Absolutely not. No. And if you want to, you can be super fancy and build it round a little structure in order to make a space for hedgehogs, who may or may not decide they want to use it.
I've got, might be very silly. Is there any point in doing any of this if you live on an apartment where you've got a balcony? How do we help things that might be in the air? Because you're not going to get hedgehogs on
you're
the fifth
floor. You're not going to get hedgehogs. And I mean, if they do, brilliant, but probably not. No, you can use, there are lots and lots of wild bee houses that you can put on walls, and you'll be really surprised by quite how fast they find you, which is amazing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really quite surprising. Even in cities, they are still, you know, buzzing around looking for places to live. And, you know, rentals are very expensive in this region. So the other thing you can do is provide pollen and nectar for things that fly. And that is absolutely valid and just as useful on a balcony, because they can fly really high and very far.
What about flowers? Flower beds either in a garden or in an apartment. How do we make sure that they're as biodiverse as possible?
So, I mean, there's a couple of things you can think about. One is there any nectar in this flower that you have chosen? So if it's a super, super complicated hyper double one, the answer might be no. It might have been bred out of it. So have a good look in and decide, is this actually going to be of any use to wildlife? And I don't mean that you should abandon all beautiful super double hybrids. I mean, just don't make them dominant in your garden or on your balcony, because it's not very useful to wildlife. I would also look at what period of the year is there not much else around. So this is true for gardens, is just as true for balconies. And that might mean really focusing on providing nectar sources and making flowers very early in the year or very late in the year, which is nice as well for you, because if there's lots and lots of beautiful flowers all around you in May, June and July, but there's nothing much in January or October, then it's a bit cheering for you as well. And this is where bulbs are brilliant. As you know, I love bulbs. I think they're just the best value plants. You stick them in the ground and you never need to do anything with them again. I think they're fab, which is where things like crocuses, snowdrops, snowflakes, anything like that, which you plant now, will provide fabulous nectar sources for bees, particularly early foraging bees. They're just fab and they cost nothing.
There's just been a question that's just come in from Christine on the email, and I'm going to put you on the spot here. But it's very relevant to what you've just said. Christine says, I live 400 metres above the lake.
Oh, nice.
Have I missed the window to plant my tulip bulbs?
No, you're good till Christmas. Don't worry.
Go, Christine. Go.
Stuff them in.
Good till Christmas. You've got 5 weeks. Take your time.
Yeah.
Lovely. Well, Hester.
Particularly for pots. That's why I love pots. They're absolutely brilliant because you control the soil temperature. So actually, if it's super late, you can still get a fresh bag of compost, tip it into a pot and put your bulbs in. Even if the ground's frozen, the stuff in the bag will not be.
Incredible. Thank you very much for all of this info. Just a reminder, we're still giving away the bird box and the robin nester. All you need to do is name a bird. Made it really difficult for you this morning. Studio at worldradio.ch or on the text 939. Start your message off with WRS. That's how you get into that competition. If you would like to buy those, though, head over to Shilliger Garden Centre. Their Christmas market is on already. It is themed by Mrs.
It's
Claus.
Gorgeous, if you haven't been. It It's lovely.
It's good. I'm going to go over. Cute. I haven't been over yet.
It's so lovely.
So go on over. They are open this Sunday as well. So make sure that you go and check that out. And I can tell you that for the next episode of Dig It, we'll be giving away a Christmas tree. So stay tuned. WRS will tell you when that is going to be giving, when we're going to be giving away that tree a few days in advance. Hester, thanks so much for Dig It today.
Thank you.
Shilliger, let your inspiration grow.